Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And good afternoon. It's John Williams. How are you? You normally hear me weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon. We used to on Saturdays visit with you between 10 in the morning and noon. We're now here in the afternoons at 1 o'clock much of the time. Don't worry about the schedule. Sometimes you'll hear a travel show here. Sometimes you'll hear college football or basketball here. But we're still on Saturdays as often as we can be, sometimes a little later in the day. Well, always a little later in the day at 1 o'clock. And as often as we can be, sometimes this version of the John Williams Show gets preempted. Again, my regular shift is weekdays from 9 to noon. And on social media, I'm WGN King John, where every day we post a news click, a daily web poll question. And yesterday we asked you, if you would have sent your kids to school on Thursday and Friday. I don't know if you know this. Producer Griffin is here. Bob Kessler's in the WGN Radio newsroom. But
Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year. Yeah, Bob, first time I've talked to you on the radio since we turned the calendar. Same to you, Griff. Good to have you in the saddle over there. We are, today is Saturday. So yesterday would have been the third of the makeup days for the Chicago Public Schools. The day before was the second, and the day before Thanksgiving, that Wednesday, was the first. Now, you may recall the Chicago Public Schools went on strike. The teachers did. The teachers went on strike. They were out for a couple of weeks. Part of the settlement was that they would make up five of the lost days. Remember, the schools want to get kids in school as much as possible to educate them and to get funding from the state and federal government, so the public schools have an interest in getting as many days as they can. The teachers went on strike for 10. It was agreed they would come back for 5. So then when do we make up those 5 days? One was the day before Thanksgiving. And the Tribune had a story this week, and it said, well, the day before Thanksgiving, nobody wants to go to school. And in fact, almost 25% of the students didn't go to school the day before Thanksgiving. And a lot of the parents did not send their kids Thursday or Friday of this week because it would normally have been the traditional winter break. Kids don't go back to school in the Chicago Public School System or weren't planning on it until Monday. Winter break is over. But they said, we got to make up some of these days. Could you come back the Thursday and Friday before? We'll start it on Thursday instead of Monday. And a lot of you said, not happening. I was shocked by how many students and how many teachers did not go to school this week on 2 days. 12% of the staff didn't show up. Okay, maybe they had airplane tickets and were in Florida. I don't know what the deal was. I'm just telling you what the numbers are. So we asked you at our news click at WGNradio.com. We feature it on the John Williams Facebook page. We said, would you have sent your kids to school Thursday and Friday? You guys want to guess what the percentage of people is who said, yes, I'd send them, or no, I would not send them?
I think my guess is maybe it broke out about 50-50.
Yeah. I'm surprised at where it was. It was 70-30, but I'm surprised at the 30.
70 saying that they would send their kids to school.
And 30% saying they would not send their kids to school. 3 out of 10 going, no, we're not going to school for 2 days in a row. Why? Because we don't want to.
Did they survey the kids? It was like 99, no, 1%, yes.
Dorks.
That 1%. Was this your experience, though, on the days when you would find that it was a snow day or for some miracle of fate you didn't have to go to school on a day you thought you did? That the first 15 minutes of that are awesome. And then it was never as much fun as the expectation was. You're going, now what do I do? My problem was this was before computers, before the internet, before cable TV. So you were home and your mom was doing the laundry and watching soap operas. And you go, then in the back of my mind, it was like, all the kids are having lunch right now. Now it's gym class. I'd rather be doing that.
Because you love school is what it sounds like.
I don't know if I love school. I love having a... Really? Does it sound like I love school?
Absolutely. You were thinking, you were reminiscing all the times you could have had, the good times you could have had if only school had...
Well, I wasn't reminiscing about English class. I was reminiscing about the social experience.
Well, sure. But that's a part of school. You can love that part of it.
Yeah, I guess I did.
And not everyone does. I think what you're saying is sort of true, except instead of the first 15 minutes are great, it's the first 6 hours. It's like most of the day is great. And then just when the school day would have been over, then you're like, oh, well, I've been the same place I would have been anyway.
Oh, that's a good point.
But it's also, I don't agree, actually, fundamentally. If it's only when you called in sick, and the work is still like this, too, for me. When you call in sick, and maybe you're kind of sick, maybe you're not that sick at all, then the guilt or just some feeling of, like, restlessness creeps up faster. But if they called it off, it's like, I don't get that feeling at all.
Well, the they in this case would be the parents, right? I mean, Thursday and
Friday.
Well,
you're talking about a snow day.
Oh, sure, right. That's when it just fell in your lap. Yeah, and even then I was, you know, always very excited about it, but then it just always was never as much fun as I thought it was
going to be. No, I would talk to somebody about that.
A therapist, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe not on the radio. No, I don't know. I don't totally relate to that. The circumstances have to be specific.
Okay, but back to the specifics of this case.
Okay.
On Thursday and Friday, it was not only did you have the option of sending your kids to school, it was mandatory. It was not an excused absence. If in fact you presented to the school a plane ticket, a receipt for a plane ticket, because you guys weren't flying back from Florida yet, or you were just going to buzz out for the weekend, it was still winter break and you were leaving Wednesday and you're going to be gone Thursday and Friday, that's an unexcused absence. You're supposed to go to school when school is open. Not because we're indignant about the strike, but that's what happened.
I'm very surprised that this is... You're exercised enough about this to lead the show with it. Granted, it's a Saturday.
Actually, but that hurts just a little bit. Okay, I am going to... Okay, so here's one of the reasons... I'm sorry, Griffin, I cut you off.
No.
All right, one of the reasons I'm animated about it is because a friend of mine is a mom whose kids are in Chicago Public Schools. She talked to us yesterday a little bit about this. I'm going to play part of that conversation for you at 1:35. Can you stick around for 20 minutes? I want you to hear a mom's reaction, which is different than my own. And, you know, she's got skin in the game. It's her kids. It's her life. So why did she keep her kids home? And she'll put up with the indignation of me, who really I have no right to be upset with her or anybody else. It's not costing me anything, but I was.
Yeah. That's where I'm sitting right now, is that I don't feel a particular strong stance on either side of this, but it is striking to me that you care. I don't really care. Parent by parent basis, do what you want to do.
I suppose so. Maybe what I'm also responding to, Griffin, is every now and then I think I understand the lay of the land. I got this. I know the room. And I turn around. A lot of times I think I'm leading a parade and there's nobody there. There's 30% said they would not send their kids to school. You thought it might be 50. It should be 4%, okay? Not 30%, not 50%. But that's just me being king of the world.
Very scoldy kind of energy coming off of you. I think
I know. I got to get over that, because last week when we visited...
You got in trouble for this last week,
with
too,
Joe Brand, who is not here today. Joe is getting married even as we speak. He and Allison...
And what, you just decided, oh, I'm not going to show up? Is that okay?
At the wedding.
Oh, I don't feel like going.
Was this a version of that? But with me being employed and all, I decided to go to work. So I think I'm doing that part of it. But congratulations to the two of them. Brenda and I will see them later this evening. But we're real happy for them. And I know a lot of our friends and staff are over there. And so we're real excited for Joe and Allison. Congratulations to them. Two lovely young people. But last week we were giving Joe and Griffin some grief because we were talking about how often you floss and making little resolutions, and I was a little scoldy then too. There are three things on the calendar today, though, that I did want to mention prior to my tangent here, so pardon me, but I will in just a minute. The Chicago Botanic Gardens Lightscape closes tomorrow. You can't get tickets for it. It's sold out and has been for a while. We were there last night for one of the last episodes of it. It closes tomorrow. And I just want to give you my review of it, because next year you need to make plans to do it. For the first time, we went to Marie's Pizza on West Lawrence last night, and I'd heard about that place. I want you to know what my review and experience was like at Marie's Liquors and Pizza, because that's an interesting place. And I've got a review for you in just a couple of minutes. And some jaw-dropping statistics about the Bears. All coming up on WG.
I've been reading Common Sense by Thomas Paine. Some would say that I'm intense or I'm insane. You want a revolution, I want a revelation. So listen to my declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And when I meet Thomas Jefferson, I'ma compel him to include women in the sequel. Work! Look around.
Hamilton is also on the calendar for you and me this weekend. Hamilton is leaving the greatest city in the world, Chicago. Tomorrow's the last show. Did you see how much money Hamilton has grossed while it was in Chicago? $400 million.
Wow.
$400 million.
Over 3 years or so?
3 years and 3 months. Probably returned to investors $200 million during its run here. Wow. Chris Jones, the theater critic for the Tribune, called it arguably the most artistically successful theater attraction in the history of Chicago, and certainly the most financially successful attraction in Chicago theater ever. At the CIBC Theater, the Schubert. A woman called in yesterday on our Bright Side and said she's going to see the show today. She's so excited. Her first time, and she has the second to last performance. Don't you think that the actors on stage are going to give the best performances of their lives this weekend?
You'd hope so. Although, maybe they're a little tired, too. But that's been one of the funny things about it running here for so long, is that eventually everybody gets to it, but it's often with a half-different cast, or it just depends on... And experiences vary person to person, which is the interesting thing about it. It's the same show, but you get different versions of it.
And yet, have you heard anybody who went to it and didn't really like it?
You're the closest.
With the exception of me?
You are the closest, yeah.
Yeah. And I liked it a lot, but I was not as, you know, it was so built up in my mind, I thought I was going to see something.
That's fair. The longer I go to see things, movies, shows, anything. I think more and more about how expectations are a huge part of your reaction.
You get that way about movies. You sort of tamp down all of your expectation. You try and you get so wrapped up in the movie culture, and then you need to sort of distance yourself before you see the big movie.
Yeah, yeah. This time of season, especially with all the big.
How did you manage that with respect to Uncut Gems?
That was the ultimate. I don't know. I look closely at what Michael Phillips wrote. He liked it, but did not love. And there are a few critics I respect who disliked it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But most people were just going nuts for it. So I couldn't quite get that out of my head.
And what
was
your review of Uncut Gems?
I loved it. I did. But there was a part of me that was like, it can only be just a movie. That's what things get built up in your mind. There's no end to what it could be in your mind. But then you have to see the actual thing.
And today it's 2 hours of a movie, and was it a good movie or not?
And it was really good, yeah. And that might have been a little bit...
Did it make your top 10 list of the year?
I don't know. I'm still formulating that. But it's in the running, yeah, for sure. It's up there.
Surgeons contemplate less operations on people's brains. I mean, you know, something that you've really got to go into, and I can't get this wrong. I need to know what we're going to do when we get in there. I mean, I'm just trying to think of people for whom
They do that less than I do my top 10 list.
Yes, you've been agonizing over this. If doctors were as concerned about their patients as you are your top 10 list, no one would ever die on the operating table. By the way, doctors, not knocking you. I'm just saying I would think you guys more than anybody would have to be ready before you go in there.
No, yes. Radio hosts
can just pop in there and go, hey, how about those Bears?
We're seeing that.
No, this has all been carefully...
This is good stuff.
I have notes, and I'm prepared to speak about these things. But
and I've derailed you. No, it's my fault, actually.
Pardon?
We were talking about Hamilton. No, there's too much to see. And if you have another job... If it's not your job to see things, then it takes some time.
Well, I talked to Chris Jones today. He and I were texting back and forth. And I said, well, pop on with us and talk to us about Hamilton's run. He said, I would, but I'm on a plane. I'm on the ground in London. We're about to fly home. I said, could you? He said, no. Only briefly, during Hamilton's $400 million run in Chicago, did attendance ever go below 90%. And that was just briefly last winter.
Huh. If you asked me, I would have guessed that every show has been sold out. I guess it's close to that.
Last winter, you could have gotten some seats. Face value, there was virtually no discounting. Some students got discount seats. But otherwise,
I know some people who won the lottery.
Full freight. And yeah, if you got the lottery, then you were lucky that way.
Yeah.
So thank you, Hamilton. What a great run you brought to Chicago. Last night, speaking of things that are ending a real nice run, the Chicago Botanic Garden in Glencoe off of Lake Cook Road, we were at their Lightscape display. That closes tomorrow. Go there next year. And all of the promotional ads for the Lightscape at the Chicago Botanic, you see the cathedral of lights that you walk through. And it's a lovely light display. It's you're walking through a sort of a superstructure they built up like a cathedral ceiling. You walk a long distance and it's millions of lights, thousands of lights. It's really cool. That is not the most impressive of the light displays. You walk through an area of singing trees where they have these tall fir trees and they're all lit different colors. And each of them are essentially the voices of an a cappella song you're listening to. So somebody is singing ooh, 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 and then somebody else is singing ooh, wee.
And the lights on the trees correspond with each voice.
So it looks like when one of these voices comes up, boom, the lights light up on that tree, that color. And as I recall, they light up to the degree that the voice is loud. So it's almost like a lit meter, and the trees are singing as you walk through them. It's a magical experience. But to me, the coolest thing was you walk through a long rectangular box, if you will. You're walking along and overhead, there's another box superstructure. And hanging down below are thousands of strings of pretty large lights. And you kind of have to put your hands in front of you and separate them as you go through this thicket of lights that are hanging down below. They're also choreographed with music. And they light up like waves or like twinkles. It's the most unusual bit of synchronicity between computers and lights and music, because it's not just blinking lights. It's really wonderful to walk through there. And that's just another one of the things you do. You can go through this whole thing in 40 minutes. We took probably an hour and 15 minutes. They have hot chocolate with peppermint schnapps and toasted nuts, and you can make s'mores. It's worth every nickel of it. Afterwards, by the way, so we were up north. I live in Lakeview, say Wrigley Field, if you will. We went up north to the Chicago Botanic Garden. Technically, that's in Glencoe. Then we come back down south, and we go to 4127 West Lawrence for the first time to Marie's Pizza, which is on some lists of the greatest pizza joints in Chicago. And I had heard about it. It's actually a packaged liquor store, and then there's a tavern front next to it. And you think, wait, this is the Marie's I've heard about? You go inside. It's a nice, cool bar, and then there's a dining area. It's very clean. It's very retro, because it is retro. It's not nouveau retro. It's retro. They've got leather banquettes and chairs. It's got a million Christmas decorations, but somehow it's not obnoxious like the places on Clark Street. It's just right and exuberant. And then next to it's a packaged liquor store. The way to do it is you go to the packaged liquor store. It's the same family. You buy the wine, get a bottle of wine there, and then they'll serve it to you at your table. You can get whatever wine you want. I think that you could do the beer that way too. I would recommend that you do that. We had three different pizzas, the special, two larges of those, and then we did the pineapple and ham pizza. And it was just terrific. It's a thin crust tavern style pizza. Susan was our server. We met Nadine Caravitas, the owner of the place. And I'm giving it 4 stars or whatever. I'm not a food critic, but boy, did we have a really fun time there.
Four Michelin stars? Can you give those out? Does any place have four?
50 Michelin stars. Now, some of these places got 2, 3, whatever. 50 Michelin stars. Virginia McCaskey, the principal owner of the Bears, turns 97 tomorrow also. So you got a lot of things going on tomorrow. Hamilton's leaving. Virginia McCaskey, who voted for Hamilton, celebrates a birthday. She'll be 97. And they're wrapping up the Botanic Gardens Lightscape. Listen to this. We'll talk with Sam Panionovich, our sports guy, later about the Bears. The Tribune, though, today has a story that notes that not only are the Bears this weekend not in the playoffs for the 11th time in the last 13 years, Think about that. 13 years, 11 times the storied Chicago Bears have not been in the playoffs. But 9 of the 12 teams in the playoffs right now have quarterbacks the Bears could have had. The Bears did not select Tom Brady. They could have. The Bears did not pick Aaron Rodgers. Have you heard of Drew Brees, who has all of the passing records? Completion percentage, total yards, touchdowns. They could have had Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. And most recently and maddeningly, Patrick Mahomes! And this guy you may have heard of named Deshaun Watson, who was built to be a quarterback someday.
Now, I'm sorry, where did this list come from?
It's in the Tribune today.
This is the most, like, stereotypical, self-flagellating Bears fan.
This is what we do.
Kind of thinking I could possibly, because you could probably say the same for most teams. They, like, a lot of teams could have had some assemblage of good quarterbacks that are in
there. That is such a good point, because remember,
this is what we love to do.
Tom Brady was picked 200-something. Everybody passed on Tom Brady, so every team in the NFL could make this list. And yet, because we're Bears fans / Cubs fans, this is what Chicago fans do.
Or maybe every team, or every fan of every team does make this list for themselves, but we just kind of keep it local. But we definitely do it here.
We sure do, and we do it well, and we have plenty of opportunity or ammunition for it. Sam Panionovich talks not just about the Bears with us, but a couple of other big games that are in your future. We'll visit with him at 2:30. It's 1:30 now. John Williams here from 1 to 3 this Saturday, and weekdays from 9 to noon on WGN.
Don't make me go to school today. Oh, Mom, don't make me go to school. I've got a high fever and my throat is sore. Oh, Mom, don't make me go to school.
Have you heard this song before? I love
just
this one.
Just let me lie here in misery. You go on to work, I'll be fine. But I'm too weak to even watch TV. Oh, Mom, don't make me go to school.
The subject's apropos here. He's singing about not wanting to go to school, and kids didn't go to school. I don't know if they wanted to or not, but if I had the perfect song for you coming out of that last commercial break and going into the interview, it would be the parents who are saying, no, I'm not going to let you go to school today. You don't have to fake being sick the way you used to. This is the conversation I wanted to play back. And listen to the point and counterpoint, if you will, here, and then tell me what you think about this. The number is 312-981-7200. You can text as well, 312-981-7200. This is part of a conversation that I had yesterday. Steve Bertrand is also in the mix from the WGN Radio Newsroom. And the woman on the phone is Ann Johnsos, who does the Apparently, that's Apparently, podcast with Tracy Weiner, who used to produce Spike Odell's show here at WGN. So a couple of our former producers do a weekly podcast, and it's about parenting. And I was thinking about Ann because she has kids in the Chicago public school system. And I said, Ann, the makeup days were Thursday and Friday of this week for the kids to go back to school, but a lot of them were not. So we asked her, did she send her kids to school to make up those days lost in the strike or not? And if not, why? We began the conversation, or at least where we'll pick it up here, is where we asked her if, in fact, she sent them the last time this came up, which was the day before Thanksgiving. Remember, they had to make up 5 days. Two of the makeup days were Thursday and Friday, but the Wednesday before Thanksgiving was also one of the makeup days the kids were supposed to go to school. So we asked her if she sent her kids to Chicago Public School that day, too.
I sent them then because we weren't traveling and there was a high expectancy of attendance, right?
At their school.
Yes, and I can tell you yesterday, one of my friends is a teacher there. We had 50% attendance at their school yesterday.
That's amazing. 50. 50%?
50. And one of my other friends is a high school teacher who had 41% at Jones College Prep.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but that really is on the parents, isn't it? I mean, that's not the teacher's fault or the student's fault. If it's that low, that's the parents' decision.
Oh, for sure. But I'm not saying, you know, so Tracy Weiner called me this morning to ask me what I was going to say, and she was upset that some teachers didn't show up. It's not on the teachers either. It's on the union. The union forced this. The teachers also had plans. A lot of people, you know, we were supposed to be out of town until Sunday, and we canceled our plans. But that didn't mean that I was going to, and my kids don't go to a neighborhood school. I have to drive them. So why would they go there to sit there and play games? I'm on Facebook, you know, clearly, so are you. The comments are people were playing games, people were watching movies, people played Jeopardy. It's not a learning day.
I wonder what should happen in a school if half of the student body is not there, but they're not there by their own choice. So maybe the school could be belligerent about it and say, hey, if you don't want to show up for education, you don't have to. But we're not going to compromise the education for the kids that do show up.
Yeah, but they are compromising the education for the kids who do show up because there's no education going on.
Well, but I mean, the teachers could be that's why I use the word belligerent. They could say, well, you know what? I'm going to have a quiz and I'm going to have a pop quiz, or I'm going to give them an assignment. And it's going to be very difficult for the families that aren't here. And that's almost punitive, but at least it's educational. Let's not turn this into movie day. But evidently,
that would be
they
well
are.
Within their rights. I mean, definitely, if that happened, then my kids would be in school. Yeah. But that's not what's happening. And on our principal, and I won't say what school they go to, but our principal said that they won't be counted against as perfect attendance either.
Really? Oh, that's very interesting.
It's unbelievable. So, how do you find this information out, Ann? Does the principal send out a note saying, hey, we're not going to really do anything? Or is this mom and dad gossip? Or how are you aware of the fact that it's just going to be a movie day?
We have local school councils, so you know, everyone does. That's part of CPS. And at the December LSC meeting, the principal announced that these days would not be counted against the kids who don't show up. That's some silence right there.
Well, that's just crazy.
Well, I'm just
playing the role of John Williams right now. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So many people had plane tickets purchased.
Okay, that's fine. So maybe we're not going to teach real hard, but it's not perfect attendance.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Of course, my kids are far from perfect attendance. You know, they're sleeping right now.
So then, as a parent, you decide, and you stay at home. Do you, Ann?
I do contract work, so I do podcasts. You know, for the monies, not WGN, but other places.
Well, my point is, I'm wondering how much an inconvenience this is for you to have them home. But if you're able to work at home or stay home, then this is a more manageable decision for you.
Definitely. And if my kids, like, if this were daycare, if school were being daycare for me, then my kids would be there. But it's not. And also, you know, eighth grade, she can almost stay home by herself.
Yeah, sure. Are you making this decision because you're angry at the school, though, that you're kind of ticked at either the union or the CPS? I don't know whose side you were on that, but here's what's happened. 5 days need to be made up. And so this is almost a protest on your part, or is that not a fair characterization?
My eighth grader would say that we are striking against the strike. my perspective is, I'm totally in support of the teachers. That strike was 11 days. It was long. It was it interfered with all of our lives. And at the time, I was like, "Oh, don't add these days on. You know, don't interfere with our vacation plans." I was angry. Now I'm just kind of lazy.
Yeah,
the kids.
Well, it's also right, but you also said, okay, so wherever your kids go to school in the Chicago public school system, they're CPS kids, but a school bus doesn't take them to school every day. So this is also an effort for you to get them up, and you need to drive them to school and then go get them again on a day when you really don't feel you have to. So it sounds to me also, Ann, like this is also accommodating you as much as the kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about me, John.
No,
to be honest.
You know, I so appreciate you joining us, and I'm not being critical or judgmental. I know that sounded that way. I'm just trying to figure out the nuts and bolts of this thing. And if I had to drive across town to take my kids to school on a day I thought they were watching Up on video, then I don't know what I would be doing in that case.
Well, now think about it, though, John, because I know you're saying, you know, we're letting the kids rule, we're letting the kids make the choices. And And truthfully, they, you know, they argued about it with us, and we contemplated sending them anyway. But when it comes down to it, they're not learning. And I thought we could do better things at home when they wake up.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we can turn this day into something better than watching Up at a classroom that's half full.
I don't know. Up is a fantastic movie.
You know, the
it's one of my favorites.
But, you know, here's the last thing I'll ask you about, Ann, and you just give me your thoughts about this. It does beg the question, if you go to school all year long and you miss one day, you're still going to be as smart or as educated a second grader as you were if you'd gone every day. And if you miss 2 days, you're still going to be. But I wonder where the drop-off actually begins to take place. If parents say, my kid's going to miss 5 days on purpose just because we don't like what happened, you wonder at some point, are you doing a disservice to your kid because they should be in school learning something, you know?
Well, let me add this, John. The eighth graders are graduating on schedule. So the extra days that are added to the end of the school year are not required for eighth graders. So they are missing those two extra days anyway. Like, you know, it's arbitrary. I think the learning that happens at the end of the school year is not there either. I think that they go and they pretty much twiddle their thumbs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends on the quality of the education. It depends on the quality of the teachers. It depends on the diligence of the kids. But today is not a learning day at CPS.
Generally, are you happy with the education your kids get at CPS at their school?
I love their school. I love their teachers. I love the administration.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, they're having a great experience. But this has been it's been a rough fall. And, you know, as much as I'm not really a rule breaker, but I didn't feel like it was necessary to send them to school today.
Nice to hear your voice, Ann. My best to your family. And tell the kids when they get up, we said hi.
I'll call you back at noon. They can check in.
Yeah, all right. Take care, Ann.
Thanks, John.
It's not because of the test today or the homework I haven't done. Please let me stay. I'll do the dishes. I'll walk the dog. I could wash the dog. I could clean up my room, pick up my toys, sweep up and vacuum and dust.
John Williams, the phone number is 312. Yeah, we know you're real sick. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Sean, you'll be my first call. You can text that number, too. What's your reaction to what you just heard there? What did you do? What do you say? WGN, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Good morning. I'm normally on in the mornings. Afternoon, Sean. How are you? Welcome.
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
You know, school is for children, and that's the only job that they have. That's the only job I had when I was a child. I went to school every day the school was open. My mother made sure of that. So I look at it as an issue of what do we teach our children? You don't go to school because the circumstances are not 100%. And the school is open. You send the child to school because then they'll start coming up with reasons why they shouldn't go down the road. So you kind of set a precedent. You know, you try to teach the kids to do the right thing. So school is open. You go to school.
How hard is it, right? It's not
right. I mean, it's simple to me. And I think she mentioned that I felt that she felt a certain kind of way about how everything went down. And she had the opportunity to send her children to school because she's at home. And she didn't have a vacation plan. So it's like there's really no reason for them not to be there. In terms of what's actually going on, shame on the principal for letting everyone know, hey, nothing's going on. You won't be penalized for it. So, of course, nobody will send their students after that.
Yeah,
but I'm sure. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Finish that thought. You're doing fine.
Yeah. And because I'm sure a lot of the teachers who had to be there, because, of course, they had plans too, a lot of them wanted to teach. I live with an educator. She's a first grade teacher. And she taught those 2 days. And she was missing 10 and 11 students each of the 2 days. But it was learning going on there.
She is a CPS teacher?
She is.
Yeah. And so she's teaching first graders, you said?
First graders, that's correct.
So if 10 kids were missing, how many were there?
Class size is 28. The first day, Thursday, She had 18, and then I said, I think she had 18 both days. It was just a matter of different students showing up.
18 out of 28. That's amazing. That's amazing. Right. And so what did she do? I mean, not that the kids are learning algebra in first grade, but then what did she do with them? Did she scale back what she was going to do?
No, she did regular lesson planning stuff. She didn't give a test or a quiz, but she did stuff. And then she actually put the work in the students who were absent folders so they can make it up, because these are grades that need to go into the grade book, because they have to have so many grades in their grade book. So they'll have an opportunity to make up that work, but she taught.
You know what I think, Sean, that it was also telling? I was just shocked when she said that it wouldn't even count against perfect attendance. But
yeah, I was too.
There was that pause, and I'm like, I know I could talk now, but I just want to let that seep in. I think that's remarkable. But I think what was also interesting is when she said, you could tell, for 2 weeks, parents were having to change their lives because the kids weren't in school. And I think that that wound is still fresh. So now, when the school district says, okay, but now we need you guys to send them back 2 days early and screw up whatever your winter break plans were, they're like, now it's my turn to screw with you people. And so guess what? We're not going to show up just because it's a tit for tat. That's what that felt like to me.
And I really,
I'm speaking in the broadest terms. The woman we had on, Ann, lovely lady. Her kids are smart. She's proactive. She, in fact, I don't know if we put this on the replay just now, but her kids were having learning time with her at home and doing activities.
Great. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. But let me ask you this. You said, is it your wife we're speaking about, the educator in your world there?
Yes.
Was she frustrated, or was she okay with 18 versus 28?
You know, we talk about class size and all of those things, and she was frustrated about parents not sending their students to class, of course. But she had, I think she had an opportunity to teach with a normal, quote unquote, normal size class size.
Yeah.
So I think she was excited about how much she was able to get done.
Yeah,
and I asked her about other classrooms, and she said it was teaching going on, to her surprise. And I mentioned to her it was probably because people had fewer students and they had fewer individual needs to attend to, so they were probably better able to do the things that, you know, they want to do on a regular basis.
Yeah, if she ever teaches in the suburbs, tell her this is what it's like all the time for those people.
I will never mention that to her.
You get in trouble for that.
I've been hearing this perspective from both sides, from teachers texting in and calling in previously. I hope they call back. But there was a former principal who said, you know, there is teaching happening these days.
Absolutely.
And the teachers are going to have to reteach, and that's a burden on them. But then echoing what you said, Sean, there's a text that just came in that said, my friend is a CPS teacher. Student population, usually over 1,000, declined by 41%.
Gosh.
And teachers liked the smaller class sizes and attention they could give. That was the silver lining for those that showed up.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that was a big part of it, because, you know, they're now able to better manage those classrooms. And these are veteran teachers. I mean, she's been teaching for close to 30 years, so she's not new to this. But even with that, especially at that age, it can be somewhat challenging if you're dealing with 37, 8-year-olds.
And do I remember this correctly, Sean? The Chicago public school population has a history of, we'll send our kids to school when we want to, because when school started before Labor Day, there was a big push to remind people to come back from vacation and go to school.
Right.
And as I understand it now, they just say, skip it, we'll start after Labor Day, because the parents of a lot of these kids don't always care that their kid is missing a day or two in grade school.
Right. Yeah. And I think lately, as the population of the school district has become more Hispanic, a lot of them are out of the country for the summer. They go to Mexico, and then coming back later, I think, posed a problem for a lot of the schools.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's been a change, you know, over the past 15, 20 years also.
Well, that's a population we are considering here. If you're Hispanic, white, or black, if you were traveling, then it's a little more complicated than you just sitting at home and being angry about this whole thing.
That's correct.
I get that. Nice to hear you, Sean. Appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot. Yep. No problem.
I'm glad you're listening. 312-981-7200. So that's where that topic of conversation is today. Monday, everybody's supposed to be back in school. What was the absentee rate? I saw it in one of the stories. So where it was around 25%, in some of the schools it was closer to 50%. I believe the absentee rate on average in the Chicago public school system is 7% or 9%. So figure it was maybe double or triple, more like triple what the absentee rate would normally be. The Mincing Rascals is a weekly podcast we record here at WGN Radio. We feature Eric Zorn from the Tribune and Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio Newsroom. Those two are in the mix every week, and then we have a cast of regulars that appear each week. I'll introduce all of them after the news, but we have been in the habit on my Saturday show of broadcasting part of that podcast, and we will after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. If you're not a regular listener to that podcast, I'd like you to be. I think, you should be listening to podcasts. That's what all the cool kids are doing, and this is one that I think you will really enjoy. We'll preview it for you. That's a little after 2 o'clock. A couple of things that the gang talked about. One, the declining population in Illinois. Where are people going and why? And also that interesting, let's just leave it at that, op-ed piece that Rod Blagojevich posted on a website called Newsmax. And why did the gang surprise me about what they said about Blago's op-ed? That's all coming up after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. Kristen is a clinician in the Chicago Public Schools. I think we're going to go to Kristen here, Griff. Yes or no? Yeah, we can. Take Kristen online, too. Good. Okay. Hi, Kristen. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi. Hi, Kristen. You're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hey, this is John. You're on the radio. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. Yeah, my name's Kristen. I am a clinician, actually, in the suburbs of Chicago in a public school district. And I was just going to chime in a little bit about how CPS kind of sets the precedence in a lot of ways with their schedule. And when they start on Labor Day, while a lot of suburban districts start sometimes, you know, August 10th, 15th, we don't see our full caseload of kids or a full classroom, really, until after after CPS started, which is, you know, after Labor Day. So that's what I wanted to chime in about.
Really? I didn't know that. So you're telling me in the suburbs that you're aware of, the mm-hmm. attendance is pretty spotty until after the holiday, too, huh?
Yeah. And I'm just one suburb out. I'm not that far south or that far west. I'm just, you know, just a few blocks from a city zip code. But they kind of set that precedence, you know, we feel, amongst teachers and clinicians alike in the districts.
But do you have an opinion about the parents and the kids who didn't go to school Thursday and Friday of this week?
Well, you know, I have a lot of friends that are teachers, and I think, and I didn't hear the beginning of your conversation, excuse me, but were these dates added on following the strike?
Yeah, those are the strike makeup days, okay. Thursday and Friday.
Okay, that's 10. Thank you. So you know, I think that just like your last caller that was talking a little bit about seeing what a class size, which they were fighting for in the strike, is a little bit more manageable classroom, that must have been very, very eye-opening for those teachers.
How about it?
You know, just to see, and again, I'm not a classroom teacher, but I work with teachers, and in the suburbs, you know, once you hit, you know, 20, 24, you know, that's when we start looking, hey, do we open up another section, you know, do we have the resources available to make the classroom more manageable, which in turn is helping with the learning process.
You know, one of the numbers that came up in a little quiz we do on Mondays, the other day we did Chicago in Review, and one of the numbers that came up in our review in Chicago is about the teacher strike and the contract that the teachers signed this year. So this is going forward. If you have a bachelor's degree in the Chicago Public Schools, your first year pay, baseline, $57,000. Do you know how that compares in your district? I mean, that sounds like a lot to me.
Let me tell you that I lasted 8 years in CPS, not because I didn't love my job and love my students, but my caseload was so out of control. I'm a speech-language pathologist, and my numbers, while kind of hovered around the legal limit at that time, it was just too much, and I was, you know, not meeting the amount of minutes that my children needed. I was in four different schools all across the city, from far south to far east, far west, and wasn't working for me. So I took a good 10-12 maybe more $1,000 pay cut just for the peace of mind.
Another interesting call. I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for calling in, Kristen.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Bye now. A couple of texts there, Griff, before we go to WGN Radio News about this.
Oh, a lot of people like Sean. I've got a few texts saying, who is that? I like that guy.
Now, Sean, if you're still listening, I thought you were outstanding. not only do we want you to call, but call management. We may actually have an opening for you. He was good.
I'm very curious about Kristen's answer to your question just there. She didn't throw it in your face. But I felt like you were setting her up to say, that is extremely high. We out in the suburbs, we don't make that kind of money first year. And she actually said, I did that for my first year, and it was brutal.
Yeah.
So it's something to keep in mind, I think, is important. I like the way this conversation has double reversed on starting out like, oh, the teachers are the reason we have to be here. And starting to, and then it's not an exact repudiation of that, but saying, hey, there's less people here. This is kind of how a school should be.
It is a reminder that 50, because everybody
got noting.
So hung up on that number when we were talking about it during the strike, how much money these teachers could make. How can you walk away from that? How can you walk away from that? Here's a lady who walked away from that. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's also 159. 207 WGN. Hi, it's John Williams, and you can hear me weekdays from 9 to noon on WGN Radio. Remember, too, that on all social media, we use WGN King John on the John Williams Show. We post a daily poll, a news click question. We asked you yesterday, it's up for the weekend, what would you do about sending your kids to school on those strike makeup days, Thursday and Friday? We talked about that in the last hour. We move on to a couple of other things in this hour. By the way, I can't help but notice, and I was listening to our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, today, and he was sort of teasing the fact that I seem to be preoccupied with the new marijuana law that we have in the state of Illinois, as evidenced by all of the lines people are standing up outside the pot shops in Chicago. There's one down the street from my house. New Year's morning, I got up about 5:30, ran over to the store to watch the line work its way through the store. It's 6 a.m. when the very first customer in Chicago came out of that store on Clark Street. I was there and watched a gaggle of media interview her and then the next couple of people that came out as though it was Elvis Presley making a reappearance. I mean, it was a real moonwalk for the media and the whole town, it seemed. And the lines were really fantastic. So then that was January 1st. January 2nd, there were still lines. January 3rd, there's still lines. Today, January 4th, I'm driving down Clark again. And a block from my local pot store, there's this long line of people queuing up, not on the block where the pot shop is. And I'm like, Brendan and I are like, what's that? The lines are still so big that they're now looking for places to queue the people up. So while they couldn't continue to put them in their street, they now put them over on another street. And so there's a bunch of people randomly lining a sidewalk, not near the pot store. And then there's a guy with an orange tag on a lanyard. And he says, okay, everybody, the next 20 of you can now give us all the available cash you have. Follow me. And then 20 of them march like a bunch of school kids on a crossing guard. And they've all got their hands held and they're marching with the one person. And then they go into the pot shop and buy all of their products. And then the other people just stand out there. If nothing else, it's been 32 to 52 degrees, so it's been pretty nice for the people that are buying the cannabis. I got a flyer in the mail this week. In fact, it arrived yesterday. I just opened my mailbox today, and it was announcing a new business opening in my neighborhood. They don't call it marijuana, and they don't call it pot. All of the literature I get says cannabis. I don't know why they do that. It seemed to me like there's nothing pejorative or inappropriate about any of the other words they want to use. They could call it doobies or reefer or pot, but they call it cannabis, and people are lining up and marching their way over. Commerce marches on.
You say there's nothing dubious, or, and yet you are inflicted with a tone here. There's a tone that marks the entire story you just told that I can't. I think there's something you want to say and you don't want to say it. That's what I'm feeling.
Hi, Producer Griff. Well, go ahead and analyze that. What do you think you're hearing?
I think you don't approve of what's happening.
And why do you think that is?
I don't know. Because you don't like that marijuana is legal now.
Even if that were not the case, and I used to advocate for it all the time, and then it happened, and I went, wait a minute, what did I say? But why do you think people like me are a little conflicted? Be the pop psychologist here, or sociologist.
Many reasons to feel conflicted, I suppose. I don't know.
Give me one.
Because you think it's a dangerous substance that should not be legally available.
Here's what is also happening. People who for 60 years were told no, 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 and then they go, yes, it's just weird. It's like I've seen people line up for concert tickets and football tickets. It's not unusual to see people in a line. Why am I so transfixed by all of this? But I just think it's so weird to live in a world that for 60 years was this way.
Well, if anything, that explains the line, though. That makes the line less notable to me, in a way.
How so?
You've been waiting 60, or you've been waiting, people have been waiting, you know, forever for this.
I guess so, but I was looking at the people in the line, judging them as I went by. We actually slowed down, and I gawked, and I thought, all of these people have been smoking marijuana all along anyway. They've probably got some at home now. So it was kind of, I don't know, I was thinking, what is motivating these people to stand in this line all day? The novelty? The edibles? I'll bet that
they want to be upstanding citizens and do something legally now that they can.
I guess, sure.
Wouldn't you rather do something legally than illegally? I think that's probably how they feel.
I don't know what the sort of, I don't know, gymnastics are that people are going through who have been buying it all along and seem to have been satisfied with what they were getting versus what they can get now. Like, maybe the price is better on the street. I'll tell you what, I brought in with me, Griff, so here's the receipt from one of the purchasers. I mean, really, it's like I'm walking on the moon now. Like, holy cow, you guys have a Starbucks?
I know, but I'm just I respect and understand that reaction. I hear you. I hear you.
Thank you for that.
I would be interested. I would say that you might feel better moving through the world from here on.
I'm looking for
if you activated the part of yourself that was not shocked by what's happening. It's okay. Just say this out loud. It's okay. You don't have to believe it, but just try it on and see how it feels. Because I think you'll see that it is fine. I don't know.
Well, imagine what it's like for the 80-year-olds out there. I mean, my friends
are probably thrilled.
I don't know. I got an email from or text somehow or another. A lady reached out to me and she says, I'm 81 and I'm worried that next we're going to start selling heroin. And I said, no, it's not going to happen. And it's not. But, okay, we'll do the Mincing Rascals after the break. It's a short one. But I just wanted to mention this. I mentioned it a couple of times. In fact, I believe I brought this up to the Mincing Rascals. I have a receipt for somebody who did buy $220 worth of marijuana. The taxes they paid were $82.50. So that's a good thing, too, isn't it? $82.50 tax paid on a $220 purchase brought the receipt to $302.50. The Mincing Rascals talked about why people are leaving Illinois. And they also had a few things to say about the shenanigans Rod Blagojevich is up to next. Last year, the Mincing Rascals podcast judged to be the best podcast in the city. This year, we were judged, that is the most recent year for which they do these sorts of things, the best podcast in the state of Illinois. Wherever you listen to podcasts, look for The Mincing Rascals, which this week included Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, our own Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News, from The Daily Line, Heather Sharon, and Austin Berg, an author and a member of the Illinois Policy Institute team. So the five of us were kicking around some of the stories, and one of the ones we talked about was an op-ed that Rod Blagojevich, our former now jailed governor, wrote for a website, a conservative website, that he thought maybe the president or his supporters would see, people close to the president. In this op-ed, Blago said that if Nancy Pelosi were the Speaker of the House when Abraham Lincoln were president, that Abraham Lincoln, maybe our greatest president of all, himself would have been impeached by these Democrats. And if Donald Trump saw that, maybe he'd like that. And if he'd like that, maybe he'd commute Rod's sentence. So that's the play that the Blagojeviches have been using. You can hardly blame them. But we pick it up from there. The first voice you hear is Heather Sharon's.
Blagojevich is right, essentially. The Congress at the time was virulently anti-Lincoln, anti-emancipation, you know, anti-Civil War. And they probably would have impeached Lincoln. But I don't know.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, Lincoln did not have a huge amount of support in Congress.
This Congress would have impeached
him. No.
I'm talking about the 1850s Congress.
Well, but I'm sorry. Has the Constitution changed between now and then?
No, but the will to do it.
Right. I'm just saying.
I mean, they did shortly after Lincoln.
Right. But it's weird to say, you know, Lincoln was this great president and these terrible people would have impeached them, like these terrible people would impeach you. But the terrible people back then were straight up racists who wanted to enslave African Americans. It's just a weird.
Yeah, the analogy is troubling. You know, Heather is right. I mean, Lincoln was one of our most controversial, most polarizing presidents. No question about it. And he did things like, you know, the suspension of habeas corpus and things like that that were very divisive. And even the Emancipation Proclamation. Right? Yeah, even the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, in history has redeemed him in so many ways that when we look back, we say, well, you know, he was fighting the good fight for the right things. And I think that's Blagojevich's subtle message to Trump, which is that history will redeem you and that history will look upon you as this persecuted Lincoln figure who did so many great things. I mean, and I don't think Blagojevich believes a word of it, frankly. I think he's just trying to get his pardon or his commutation.
I'm glad he wrote it just because I love the video of him shirtless and gray-haired walking around the prison yard.
Can the media find a different picture? There's a million photographs of Rod Blagojevich.
That's the most recent one, though.
Yeah, the only one we seem to have now is him shirtless with white hair.
But that's
that
the video,
in.
You know, the short video.
Oh, I'm thinking of the still.
No, there's a short video, and it looks as if you're catching Sasquatch in the wild or something, because it's from a distance, and, you know, you can just sort of see
credit
him walk.
Credit to the Tribune for sending a photographer and a reporter out there.
Seriously, this guy was famous for being coiffed and well-dressed, and the one I saw online, the still picture of him, was him, you know, with his prison garb on, no shirt, he's been working out, he looks great, he's got that mop of white hair now, and I think it's editorial.
Well, no, I disagree with that. I think Austin just said it's the most recent picture. Yeah. You wouldn't run an old picture of him, would you?
I wouldn't do like they do with Ann Landers or Dear Abby, where it's really old and they don't look like that at all.
Right.
But he doesn't look that much different with his clothes on.
Well, maybe the shirt. I'll give you that.
How about running his mug shot? To me,
this is akin to that.
Maybe
it's
the pride, though. He looks pretty good for his age.
He does. I mean, on the upside, he looks buff. So
maybe
he's got
the pride of his physique offsets the embarrassment of his hair.
He'll probably
it's a trade.
He would make the trade if he could.
I just feel bad for Patty Blagojevich. It's got to just be like, you know, Lucy with the football and Charlie Brown and feeling like you came so close several months ago.
Come on, Charlie Brown. I'll hold the ball and you kick it. You'll pull it away and I'll land flat on my back.
And to just be nowhere. And, you know, as a mom with two daughters, I sympathize and empathize with that. But, I mean, if he was going to pardon him, you would have thought he would have done that.
It could be his resolution for this year.
Oh, we don't know.
This time I'm going to kick that football clear to the moon.
I think if he's going to do it, he's going to do it after the election. I think he realized, I mean, he was talked out of this right by Republicans in Illinois, LaHood and Kinzinger and people like that. They went to him and said, don't do this. This guy was bad news and it'll send the wrong message.
There were five of them, as I recall, Eric.
That's right. And so I think he may, in trying to weigh this, it's not obvious how politically that's going to play. And he's in no hurry. He's not going to waste a single iota of political capital on Rod Blagojevich.
Well, because there's no capital to be gained. Illinois is all going to be blue no matter what, so what does he care, right?
Well, that's probably true. Although it could
he
play
could
around...
make problems for Pritzker, maybe. I don't know. That was
could,
my only.
And it could play around the country. I mean, Dick Durbin wants Blagojevich out, so it's like gonna. I mean, I think the political calculation is too complicated for Trump to worry about right now. And it's just like why, unless he's just saving it as a smoke bomb to throw when there's some terrible other headline that he wants to get off the front page.
So. But about his point, I was a little surprised to see what you guys said when he said that Pelosi would have impeached Lincoln now too. And somebody texted into the show today and they said, listen, if Blago is saying that this is stealing the election, there's nothing more democratic than the people through their representatives overturning the election of the president. If he's a king, you have to cut off his head. This impeachment process is very democratic. It's not stealing anything. It's of the people.
It's sad because we're debating the merits of this op-ed, which was clearly like a political calculation, right? A great podcast on the saga of that desperation is Dave McKinney's Public Official A, which is fantastic, and he interviews Patty a lot for that.
Gee, Eric, I wonder why we haven't been able to get Patty on this podcast.
Well, Patty famously won't come on WGN because I occasionally am on the air here, I guess, is her reasoning. I mean, I don't know. Heather feels bad for Patty Blagojevich. I look upon her as an enabler of her husband and as someone who benefited
and who
from...
could have gone to jail, by
That's
the way.
And who continuously is going on Fox News trying to get similar, you know, sound bites.
I mean,
that flattering, right?
And yeah, and she, you know, she had this phony baloney job with Tony Resco, and you know the whole thing was just, you know, I don't feel she's an enabler, if not a co-conspirator in all this, and I feel bad for the girls. That's who I feel bad for.
And yet the sentence was probably too long.
I'm a big yes on that. Way too long. How about you?
Probably yes.
Eric?
A little bit too long.
Even you. And Heather, do you have an opinion about that?
I don't. I mean, the judge reaffirmed it twice. If he had had second thoughts, he had a chance to lessen it.
But you are sympathetic at least to the Blagojevich family.
Yes, I am.
The girl. Yeah. Let's make it the girls. How about that?
Sure.
Let's make it that.
I'm imagining.
As a mother of girls. You can.
Yes, as a mother of girls, like a father of daughters.
The state's population is dwindling for, what, 6 years straight now, Austin?
That's right.
Is that
and
a problem?
Everything's fine. The dog meme with the fire.
I suppose that's the latest census data, and it's demonstrating that we not only have lost population for 6 years straight, but we are, as a percentage... No, as a percentage, maybe as a total, we're in the top two or three in the country. What's going on here, and does it matter?
It matters a great deal. So what we essentially saw here was, for the first time, the full decade in one picture for Illinois. And it was essentially the first ever lost decade for the state. We've never seen this much population decline over a decade. We've only seen it once before, which is a very small decline in the 80s. We saw 169,000 people. That's the amount by which our population declined over the decade. No other state saw as large of a population loss in raw terms. In percentage terms, the only one worse is West Virginia. And when you're in the same sentence as West Virginia on any demographic issue, yeah, it's a huge problem. It should be a five-alarm fire. As has been discussed endlessly, this is driven by people leaving the state. Nearly 900,000 people on net left Illinois over the decade. That's as if a third of Chicago left. Our population decline is as if all of Naperville was wiped off the map immediately. It has very, very, very serious implications. And the question should not be, oh, woe is me, Illinois is terrible. It's what's the policy response to this? And that has been so lacking in both the General Assembly and in the governor's office. The panacea to everything, all of our state's woes, is supposed to be this tax hike, when all of the evidence points to the fact that investment is not attractive enough in Illinois to bring people and jobs here. And that's why people are leaving. Well, and yet we are going to punish that investment even more as a solution to this problem. And I think that's totally
because
backwards.
Of income tax, graduated income taxes, things like that.
And hike on corporate income tax rate, too.
Well, I agree that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, but it's not clear to me that the policy response is what we're talking about. I mean, you look at states like Minnesota and New York.
High taxes.
They have higher taxes in New York and Minnesota than they have here. They have a steeper graduated income tax in Minnesota. So
New York is the only one worse than us on out migration in Alaska.
So are people just like looking at their tax bills? They're like, oh, we're paying 7% instead of 6%, and they're leaving. I mean, I think there's got to be sort of a broader explanation as to why Illinois and why not. I mean, Wisconsin's got a graduated income tax. I mean, it's like, what is it about the state? What is it about the way we are putting things together that is driving people away? If there is anything that we can put our finger on, I mean, I read these things about, oh, let's change the way our pensions are funded. I'm not sure people are making decisions based on pension debt.
I don't think it's like a homo economicus argument, right? Like, people aren't perfectly rational and aren't going line by line with all of this stuff. But the survey data says number one most popular response for people who want to leave is taxes. The academic literature suggests that it is opportunity is the biggest driver of leaving. So people are finding better opportunities elsewhere. Neither of those things are helped. In fact, both are worsened by hiking taxes yet again.
But I was wondering if this is sort of like on the national level, where we're not attracting enough immigrants.
Or we're not allowing them in.
We would do better if we had more people coming into this country, if for no other reason to pay into Social Security or to do the jobs that some of us don't want to do, some of the lower paying jobs. That's just an economic fact, right? Is there something similar to that in Illinois? Do we suffer because people aren't helping to pay down our pension debts?
Yeah, I mean, for every one person we lose in population, that's one less body to feed this massive amount of debt that the state has.
That could be our campaign slogan. Come to Illinois.
Right, exactly.
Help us pay down our debt.
Feed the beast. Feed the beast.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, to Heather's point, it is important to decompose this stuff because the policy levers that you actually really have as a state, you can pretty much only address that domestic migration factor. It's tough at a state level to increase a lot of, you know, your natural increase from births and deaths, and it's really tough from a state level to increase the number of immigrants. Those things are more structural. The things that can be reformed are on the flow of people from Illinois to other states and the people coming into Illinois from other states.
My phone lines, my text lines light up with people going, my $18 trailer license is now $180 for my boat trailer. And Uber and Lyft and transfer fees and your vehicle stickers.
Vehicle stickers.
I was going to say, God. I'm about to get hit with that. I thought I was going to be really smart and pay my vehicle registration before the first of the year, before the price goes up $50.
Yeah.
But because my license doesn't expire until January, I still have to pay.
So you're saying people's behavior is dependent upon the cost of things that they buy. Interesting.
And yet, I also just wondered if it wasn't the totality of it. Like, is anybody really proud of being from Chicago? Hoosiers? Illinois. Chicago, maybe.
Sure.
But Hoosiers love being Hoosiers. Minnesotans are obnoxiously proud. Probably Texans, too. Are Wisconsinites that way? I wonder if there's a pride index and where that would be, Austin, because I'll bet we wouldn't be very high.
And that's why I think we're better off not talking about the pension problems.
Just ignore it.
Well, I'll feel better. Right. But I do think there might be something to that, too. The more that we all talk about the problems, I think that maybe doesn't exacerbate the problems, but refocuses Illinoisans on the problems and brings people down.
Well, sure, that's a consequence of that, but are you not seriously suggesting we don't address
talk about
these
the
things?
Pensions? No, I'm not serious about that. But I think Steve is making
a reasonable point that we have to keep it in context. And every time I say pension crisis, I wince a little bit because crisis, I think, is one of those weighted terms.
I feel that way about crime.
Yeah.
And our crime rates have gone down again in Chicago, right? I mean, that's not a small factor, right?
But as opposed to crime, our pension problem is the worst of any state in the history of the nation. So I would
see,
call
there
that
you go. There goes two more
see,
people moving out.
Thanks a lot, Austin. We'll put Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Austin Berg. Thank you, Heather Cerrone and Eric Zorn. I'm John Williams. That's the Mincing Rascals. What did you hear there? About 10 minutes of it. And we go for about 30, 40 minutes each week. Incidentally, Griffin, this would be a sort of a task. I'm looking at my producer that I could have you do, although we're almost done here, or my producer, Elif, who's with us Monday through Friday, Elif Garris. But I wonder if anybody has done that. Is there a sort of state pride rank? This is the sort of thing that our Vibe Score would be about. Vibe Score is a segment we used to do on Saturdays. Maybe we'll bring back, but it was where we would rate things on a scale of 1 to 100. And I wonder which state's population is most prideful. And I do think Illinois is woeful. Chicago, people from Chicago are totally stoked about being Chicagoans. People from Illinois, I don't think so. Minnesotans, super proud. Texans, happy to let you know they're from Texas. I forgot about Wisconsinites. They're pretty wound up about being from Wisconsin.
I don't like to generalize too much, maybe, but yeah, I think there's a state pride, absolutely. Definitely, with Wisconsin.
Sam Panionovic just strolled into the studio. We're going to talk sports with Sam in a second. But, like, what would you guys, am I missing any obvious ones here? New York, Wisconsin,
well, it's
Minnesota,
Michigan. I do think there's something that happens with it getting concentrated in cities, so then there's less to go around statewide. Like, New York, I think, actually might be a good example of that. I don't know much about East Coast dynamics, but, you know, obviously New Yorkers take great pride in being from the city.
Massachusetts is the first one that comes to mind to me.
Why? Think Texas comes to mind first.
They love
for me,
Massachusetts. Did I say that right? Massachusetts?
Massachusettsites?
Sure.
I believe that's luggage.
Actually, I don't know, yeah.
They love themselves.
I thought it was Bostonians.
Well, that's a different monster.
But see, but that's what I think. I mean, in Chicagoans, I think, are. I hope my premise is correct. I mean, I just, only because I'm talking about this, I'd like to have something to talk about here. It seems to me like Illinoisans are not super proud of being from Illinois.
Well, yeah, I think statements that general are automatically dubious, and yet there is something sticky about
there's
what you're saying.
There's a kernel of truth.
There might
that.
Be a kernel here.
When Illinoisans gather and they talk about Illinois, what do they talk about? Our debt, how corrupt our politicians are, how stupid our taxes are. That's what we do. We don't go, hey, I love being from the land of Lincoln.
Well,
I
certainly
have
not when
been
we talk,
in that gaggle.
Definitely when we talk about the politics of Illinois, it's
tell
very
me something
it's very grim.
Statewide.
And maybe that dominates the conversation. So,
well,
yeah.
Well, it is obvious. And then, you know, and then just to make matters worse, this is what Bostonians have, Sam. We don't even have a tradition of winning sports teams. Like, I hope that the Massachusettsites, or whatever you call
it. I really want to know what that term is. I'm looking
I'll find it.
Right
it out. Hold on.
I hope they appreciate their good fortune because that has to be the winningest metro in the country.
I'm glad you brought up the split, though, between Boston and Massachusetts because I'm very proud to be from the southeast side of Chicago. But am I proud to be from Illinois? I'm proud of the fact that we had Abraham Lincoln, but that was a really long time ago.
We got, you know, and we have Barack Obama, and we have, I don't know, maybe there's some, Ronald Reagan is from Illinois, so we have politicians of all stripes, Hillary Clinton, we've got some famous politicians from Illinois, but that to me is history. That's not
correct.
I'm not feeling
that. I'll tell you one more thing. I lost a lot of state pride. I went to the state fair this past summer in August, and they didn't have a blooming onion anywhere. Lost my mind. I walked around the campground three times. No blooming onions.
I'll tell you something. I think we need to pause here, right, Griff? I got to take a commercial break. We'll come back and not talk about this with Sam Panionovich. But here's one Illinoisan that I think Illinoisans up top of the state to the bottom of the state are proud to know and proud that that person is from Illinois. Orion Samuelson.
I was not going to guess that. December wheat futures are up 37 cents.
My wife and I enjoy a fine steak. I think that Orion is known top to bottom, and people in Cairo and Springfield and Rockford, nobody has a bad thing to say about Orion because there's nothing bad to say.
Corn futures up.
All right, we have
cents.
To stop that. It's 2:37 on WGN. Hi, I'm John Williams.
Hey, sorry to interrupt. Just while I'm looking at it, though, right now, we've got a couple texts that say, Orion's from Wisconsin.
Well,
take that, King!
So, like I said, we're a woeful state. I think Illinois gets to claim, I know a little bit about his history. I've read the book, but I think Illinois gets to claim. It's funny how like that happens. If you were
we can share.
And then you go to California, become a famous movie star, but you were born here. Does Illinois claim rights to you or not? Do this, though. Text to 312-981-7200. Tell me the state that you're listening to us or that you claim. Where are you from? And then 1 to 100, how proud are you to be from that state? So if you're listening to us in Wisconsin right now and you're all about Big Red up there, go ahead and give us a call or text and give me a 92. I think this, though, is going to beg people who are unhappy. This place sucks, man, 21. But if you, let's just hear, just 312-981-7200. Go Indiana, 86. Illinois, 47. Whatever your number is. Texas, 15. Whatever it is. And don't just be the people that are unhappy. Be the people that are happy and be the people that are in the middle. Whoever you are, 312-981-7200. Griff, you'll have to total them up, average them out, and then rank them before the top of the hour. That's why we have producers. Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio. John Williams here. It's 2:38. We asked Sam to pop in and just answer a couple of sports questions for me. One was, Sam, I was reading the Tribune today, and they have this revisionist history piece by Dan Wiederer, and it says, Cedric Benson over Aaron Rodgers, Frank Murphy over Tom Brady. Here is a list of draft mistakes that the Chicago Bears have made over the years. Two statistics that jump out at me in this article. For the 11th time in 13 seasons, the Bears are not in the playoffs. I knew we were in a rut, but I didn't know it was that bad. And of the 16 teams in the playoffs, 12 of them are featuring quarterbacks the Bears could have had, including, I don't know if you've heard of Tom Brady, six Super Bowl titles, maybe seven this year. Drew Brees, all-time leader in passing yards, touchdown passes, and completion percentage. Aaron Rodgers of the you-know-who, Russell Wilson of the Seahawks. Even Jimmy Garoppolo, we talk about a local product, and Deshaun Watson from the Texans, and of course, Pat Mahomes, who everybody loves to remind themselves we could have had from the Chiefs. Griffin pointed out, though, Sam, that pretty much every team could do this. That is, everybody missed on Brady. I mean, I wonder how fair it is to, with a crystal ball, look back and say, oh, you shoulda. Maybe it's not so easy to know.
It's not fair entirely, but when you miss on a group of players, right? It's one thing to miss on Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, individually speaking. But when you throw the whole list on the wall and look at all the guys that they could have taken, when it's a group of people, it's more upsetting, right? But Aaron Rodgers, I remember watching that draft. Aaron Rodgers went 24th in the first round of that draft. It was so bad that they actually took him out of the green room where all the cameras were, because he was all by himself on an island. They take the 10 or 15 best players, and they're all hanging out, and every team kept picking somebody that wasn't Aaron Rodgers. So they took Aaron Rodgers out of the green room, and I think he's left that chip on his shoulder ever since he was drafted. By the way, a little trivia for you. I don't know if you know this. Aaron Rodgers, out of high school, only had one college scholarship offer. Only one, because he went to a community college and then went to California. Take one guess. The only college that offered him a scholarship.
University of Illinois.
Yes. Yeah, that was it. They were the only team in the country. Did you look that up?
No, but I mean, you know, we were talking about Illinois, but he didn't go to Illinois.
He was offered an opportunity to go to University of Illinois, but he decided to go to community college near his home in California, and then he goes to Cal, and the rest is history. But the Illini almost had a piece of Aaron Rodgers.
Boy, that's a womp-womp moment for Illinois. I mean, it's a Big Ten football team here.
Well, he picked a community college over
Illinois.
That's
what I mean. That's got to hurt their feelings. And just one last note about how maybe easy it is in retrospect to say you should have picked Tom Brady, but this is what they said in the story in the Tribune. Brady was thought of as a wiry quarterback with limited athleticism and an average arm. He hadn't started his first two seasons at Michigan, and even in his last 2 years, he was always competing for his job with a guy named Drew Henson.
Yep.
Brady left college with a total of 30 touchdown passes and 17 interceptions, which I think just reinforces the point I've always thought, that anybody would be the greatest quarterback in history playing for Bill Belichick's Patriots over the last 15 years, right? I mean, think about how many quarterbacks could have had all time written next to them if they had that line and that defense and that coach and the amount of cheating they do and all the swell things that the Patriots do.
It's a fascinating conversation to have, because you look at some of the quarterbacks even going into this draft and which ones are the superstars. I don't know, but that's not why I'm paid, or that's why I'm not paid a lot of money to be a scout that will draft the quarterback, because some guys you don't know until you have them. Like Brady and Rodgers, for example, they both had extremely large chips on their shoulders because of where they were drafted or where they weren't recruited or where they weren't signed or whatever. But Brady is just a freak when it comes to film and it comes to studying the game and learning what you don't do well and then picking you apart. He's a different breed. He's a lot like Jordan, where Jordan would spend hours in the weight room and the film room off the floor. Nobody saw that, of course. The competition in those guys, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, in baseball, Mike Trout is another example. The amount of time they spend on their craft off the field or off the floor is unbelievable.
Do you think the LSU quarterback is a slam dunk?
No, I don't. Not at all. I mean, he wasn't even good last year. He was okay last year, and they brought in a new coordinator from the Saints. Joe Brady is their new passing game coordinator, and he brought a lot of principles from the Drew Brees offense into LSU. And LSU, the thing about LSU is they have four blue chippers playing wide receiver. So all he has to do is complete a pass, and then they make one man miss, and they're gone. He's a good quarterback. Is he a great quarterback? No, I don't think he is.
But isn't that the dilemma then for, I mean, doesn't that then offer some context for the Mitch Trubisky thing? I don't know, he's the best quarterback coming out, or the national championship quarterback maybe. So, yeah, you want that kid, or maybe you don't. I mean, you can't know They didn't know it about Tom Brady, and they thought it about Mitch Trubisky. I've always been fascinated by how I can't pick out a movie for my family, let alone be asked to answer to the development of a 21-year-old athlete over the next 10 years. I think that's a much more difficult task than we appreciate.
It's a very, very tough job, and there's a reason that general managers and their shelf lives are not very long, because if you can't connect in basketball on a top five pick or in football, if you can't get the right quarterback, you're out of work. You're back out on the street. It's a very competitive lifestyle, and you're judged on things that, plain and simple, are, you know, slam dunk decisions or not. It's all with your gut. Do you like them or do you not?
You follow the lines. You're very much into sports gaming. So do you have the feel for who's the favorite to win the Super Bowl of the 16 teams right now?
Baltimore Ravens are the favorite.
Okay, I have some questions for you about all of this. 247 WGN Radio News at 3 o'clock. This is John Williams. You hear me weekdays from 9 to noon, I hope. And, of course, Bob Surratt starts Monday morning. Tune in then for that. If you hadn't heard Bob back in the day, it's your introduction to a legendary voice in Chicago. And Bob Surratt fans, remember now, he's back on WGN Radio in the morning starting on Monday. Sam Panionovich is in our studio. We're asking Sam about the 16 teams. I'm not going to break them down. This isn't that kind of show, but just indulge me a little bit here, Sam. Of the 16, the Ravens are favored to win the Super Bowl?
I can give you the odds, and these are what Las Vegas computes. These are their predictability outcomes. This is from the Westgate, my favorite book in Las Vegas, and every book has different numbers. It's like a gas station. Every price is different. But here are your top teams according to the Westgate. So the Ravens right now are 2-1 to win the Super Bowl. 100 wins you $200. After the Ravens, it is the 49ers at plus 350.
San Francisco.
Then it's the Chiefs at 4-1. Then the Saints at 6-1. And after the Saints at 6-1, it's the Patriots at 10, the Packers at 12.
What do you think of the Patriots there? Is it because of that last game against Miami that people got a little soft on them, or were they going to be there anyway?
That didn't help the case. This will be a true test on Tom Brady's ability to win at this age with maybe the worst supporting cast he's had as far as skill position players. So he's only getting older, and his friends are all starting, like Noel Gronkowski, of course, this year, and Danny Amendola is gone. So he's throwing to receivers that aren't as good as the cast has been, and he's also, what is he, 42 or 43 years old right now? So he has to literally carry them by himself, and I think that's the skepticism, that he just doesn't have the sauce in his arm anymore to make the big and the big accurate throws.
What team is the most fun to watch? Ravens, 49ers, Chiefs, Saints, Patriots. If I were going to click on the TV, I don't know these teams that well. Who would I really enjoy looking at?
Lamar Jackson's the most exciting player in the NFL this season because there hasn't been somebody like him on the field since Michael Vick, because he is a better runner than he is a passer. But at the same time, you have to respect both, because you can't spy him with an outside linebacker or a defensive end, because then you leave the middle of the field open, and then, oh, by the way, he's going to pirouette around somebody and throw a laser for a strike. They're almost the toughest team to guard because of what he can do,
Lamar Jackson,
so well with his arms and with his legs. And there's not a lot of tape on him because it's still sort of fresh.
And who does he play for again?
The Baltimore Ravens. He's the MVP of the league, King John.
Has that been in all the papers? People know about this?
You should know this.
Yeah, okay. I'm just writing that down. Baltimore Colts.
Mm-hmm.
Ravens.
Johnny Unitas.
And when Ryan Burrow came around the radio station this week and asked me for, he was asking everybody for $5.
For what?
Hopefully.
Is he okay?
He's had some hard times lately. He's asking, you could put $5 on any team you want. You could put $5 on every team if you wanted. But it was $5 for a team. So I gave him $10.
You're never going to see him again. You know that, right? He's gone.
Oh, I think he was able to collect a whopping $65 or something like that. But I've got the Saints for $5 and the 49ers for
$5. I like the Saints bet. The Saints are very exciting, and Drew Brees has revolutionized this offense again. He was also hurt earlier in the season, so he should be sharper going into the postseason. He's another older quarterback, wrong side of 40, but he's very talented, and he has a great cast around him. It's just, we think we know, and then we don't know. Like last year, nobody picked the Patriots to do anything. We counted them out last year, and guess what? They won the Super Bowl. So until you kill the king, not you, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, they have two kings, I guess. Until they lose, it's almost like I don't believe it until I see it.
What do you make of the college national championship game a week from Tuesday.
Do you remember 2 months ago you had me on the show? I was on my way down to Kentucky, and I said that LSU had the talent to not only beat Alabama but win the national championship. And you were like, wait, huh?
That's what I said.
Oh, here's the thing, though. Now everybody thinks that because they've seen LSU climb the escalator all season long. So it's like the balloon is ready to pop with LSU. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to win the national championship, but they are a six-point favorite against Clemson, who won the national championship last year and returns almost their entire offense. So it's fascinating to me that I get that many points if I would like to bet on a team like Clemson. LSU's good. They're very good.
They had a better playoff game too, right?
Well, Oklahoma, of the four that made the playoff, Oklahoma was way down the page.
Oh, really?
It was really a three-horse race.
Is that what explained it? Because I wondered about that.
LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, those were the three. LSU was a 14-point favorite against Oklahoma, and that number wasn't nearly as high as it should have been, clearly. So it was a three-horse race all the way along. I think everybody's overreacting to LSU beating a very average Oklahoma defense and looking at how Clemson should have lost to Ohio State. You follow?
So what's the line then on this game?
LSU is minus six against Clemson.
So that means Clemson only has to win or lose by five.
LSU has to win by seven or more to win the bet.
Yeah.
And everything under that,
so
Clemson would win.
So would you take that bet?
I picked Clemson already at plus six.
I see.
So if LSU wins by one, two, three, four, five, they win, but I win too.
Talk to me a little bit about the Chicago White Sox. Rick Morrissey had a funny piece in the Sun-Times today. Go ahead and think big for 2020. White Sox fans, you've more than earned it. And then he, like some of these guys, just went through all of the tools that the White Sox have in their box, which includes counting on some guys who are coming off injuries, some guys that are very young, but doing really well in key positions, right? Center field, pitcher, catcher, et cetera. Are you on the White Sox bus this year?
Well, I'm on the White Sox bus every year because,
you know what
I'm
mean,
a diehard White Sox fan. Let me put it this way. I remember covering one of my first years covering sports in Chicago. I did it from 11 to 18 before I moved to Vegas. I remember being at Wrigley in 2012 when the Cubs and the Astros both had 100 losses. And you thought, where does this end? Will it ever end? Will they ever be good again? And they started the draft well and get the right young players. Thing is, those young players only take you so far because you need to add the veterans. And remember what the Cubs did in 14 and 15 and going into 16. John Lester, John Lackey, Jason Hayward, David Ross, Dexter Fowler, Ben Zobrist. What do they all have in common? They're all players from winning teams that are veterans that can help take this team to the next level. So with the White Sox, you have a very young stable of starting pitching. Dallas Keuchel, maybe in name, is not a top 10 pitcher in the league anymore, but he is a Cy Young and a World Series winner. He is going to teach those young pitchers how to come prepared every single day to do their jobs. You bring in a guy like Grandal, who's an outstanding defensive catcher, not only framing, but with his arm. You bring in Edwin Encarnacion, potentially. It's a guy's going to hit 40 home runs in that bandbox on the south side.
You think so?
He's hit 38 for the last 10 years.
How old is he?
He's about 30. I think he's about 35, but he's a powerful dude and also an older veteran Latin player. And this White Sox, you push, there's a lot of young 22, 23, 24-year-old Latin players that will benefit from having an older Latin. I mean, you get what I'm saying, right? The chemistry in the locker room is so important, and the White Sox have not had the veterans around in the last couple of years. They've done a great job at drafting and developing, and when those players are ready to go, then you merge them with veterans that can take it to the next level.
Sam, I asked Dave Ennett and Zaslowski, our producer of White Sox baseball here, I said, who wins more games, the Cubs or the White Sox? And, you know, I guess most people in Chicago would say, of course, the Cubs. But then I said, all right, let's spot the White Sox 10 games.
Oh, no, that's can't spot them 10.
Really?
Because the White Sox will win at least 81. The Cubs are not winning 90.
So that's an easy one for you.
I think if you made me make a line, and you did not tell me about
this. Is that essentially what I'm doing here, aren't I?
I guess so. So if we had to give the Cubs some games delay, I would probably make the number 5.5. So if the Cubs win 90, the White Sox
only
have to
win
85. Yeah. I think that's a much better number than 10 because 10 is too high. Because the Cubs, that locker room this year, whew, if they're talking about trading Chris Bryant and they won't extend Anthony Rizzo and you have a rookie manager who's never done it before, that thing could
Okay, give me this then. Best case scenario for the Cubs this year.
They win the division. And
what's their record? 92?
88, 89 wins.
Really? Boy, you're that. Okay. What's the worst?
The pitching is the problem. The starting pitching is the problem.
89 wins for the Cubs, best case scenario. Worst case scenario for the Cubs.
They win 81, 82 games, bottom out, trade guys away, and
don't make the playoffs.
Made the wrong move with the manager.
What's the do that for the South Side?
Best case scenario on the South Side, they win the division, and they probably win a playoff series.
How many games they win?
Best case scenario, about 85, 86.
Okay, fine.
I think worst case scenario, they win 78, 79.
Yeah.
They're going to be, they should be a 500 team, and right behind the Minnesota. The Twins will be the favorite to win the division, but I wouldn't be stunned if the Sox were a playoff team at all.
Both teams were in third place at the end of the year in their divisions. White Sox are a second place team maybe in their division this year.
The Tigers and the Royals are dreadful, and the Indians are starting to shake it up and eventually knock down the castle because they're at that point where they have achieved pretty much all they can with this group, so they're going to start trading and selling off.
How do you see the National League Central playing out for the Cubs?
I like the Cardinals. I like the Brewers. Cubs, I'd probably put the Cubs on the two line right now. I think it's probably St. Louis, Chicago, Milwaukee. But again, we have to see how things shake out with this whole Bryant situation. Is he there? Is he not? Do they keep Wilson Contreras? There are a lot of questions I have to have answered by the time we get to spring training.
If I asked you to place a bet on Chris Bryant being with the Cubs this year, what would you say?
I would say he is, but the fact that you're asking me that question is just, I don't understand how.
Does that get in the guy's head? So it's even if he is wearing a uniform, then all year long he's like, boy, this is no way to treat a superstar.
If I would have told you in 2016 they win the World Series and then 3 years later they push Madden out the door and they've alienated Bryant and Rizzo, what would you have said?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just it's,
how does
it's
that happen?
Unbelievable. I think he's there, but the fact that we're even having this conversation is really sad.
I got less than 2 minutes left, Sam Panionovich. Griffin, did you total up the state likability pride numbers for us? Are you working on that in there?
I didn't enter them into any kind of database. No, I didn't crunch the numbers, but I've got a lot of numbers in front of me. A lot of people texted in.
Throw a couple at us.
Illinois, one.
1 to 100. How pride are you, proud are you to be from your state?
Tennessee, 88. And my husband is 98.
I think Tennesseans are very orange.
Illinois, 100.
How about that? Good for them.
Wisconsin, 80. Illinois, 98.
Oh, good.
A lot of people sending in full sentences.
It's hard for Griff to read sometimes. Yes.
Chicago, 90. Illinois, 15.
I think that's the
Illinois,
truth.
95.
Well, by the
more
way,
state
texter,
pride than we expected.
One texter from the 630 said that they're proud of Tom Skilling.
Yeah, we got Tom Skilling.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Better put that with Orion Samuelson.
Illinois, 65. Illinois, 92. We're doing pretty good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Sam, in the you're watching the same clock I am. Gambling in Illinois, where are we? What are you thinking about?
We
on that
keep
topic?
Getting it pushed. The baton keeps getting kicked back. I think we'll probably have it by football season 2020. I don't believe in March Madness. They just have too many things they have to iron out. So I would think by football season 2020, we're ready. By the way, congrats to Mr. and Mrs. Joe Brand. I'll see you, I believe, at the reception if you don't blow that one off, too.
I have this job, but thank you for coming in, Sam, and congratulations to the Brands. A lovelier couple you will not meet. Our own Joe Brandman.